All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome into a brand new edition of the Real Life Podcast. Doing things a little bit differently here on the Thursday edition of the pod with myself, BM, and Jay, all chilling in Toronto. We're doing a bunch of different things, running around, busy with All-Star festivities. We decided to do a couple of interviews for today as well. And by we, I mean me. So you can drop it with all that hashtag avoid the grind crap. I did some work. I put together a nice couple of interviews. We're going to hear from Travis Ridgen. He's on YouTube as Trav4Oilers. He's got a podcast called Slingin' the Bizkit, and he's going to join me a little bit later on in the pod. But our first interview is delivered by our friends at DoorDash. For a limited time, our Canadian listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more. All you need to do is download the DoorDash app and use the promo code NATION20. That's Nation25 on the DoorDash app for first-time users. Give it a download. Dash that for the win with DoorDash. Maybe you want to check out that new Double Dash feature. Get two of your favorites delivered at once with no extra delivery fees. Maybe you want pizza. Maybe your significant other is going, no, I want a burger. You can get them both done from different spots with DoorDash and the Double Dash feature. And that promo code Nation25 is going to save you some coin in the process. All right, let's get into our first interview for the day. John Morris. You'd probably recognize his face even if you don't recognize the name. He is a two-time Olympic gold medalist. You know me, I'm a big curling guy. Any chance I get to sit down with a curling legend, I am not going to pass it up. We shared stories about the Olympics, about curling with Kevin Martin, his favorite moments from his career, and the best part, he is an Oilers fan. So we kick things off with some Oilers talk. Enjoy the interview.
He is a two-time Olympic gold medalist. He's captured three Briars in his career, and I really hope I didn't mess those numbers up. John Morris joins me. John, how's it going?
Going great, Tyler. How you doing, buddy?
I nailed it, right? Two Olympics, three Briars?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I don't really keep track of that stuff, but I think you're pretty darn close.
We'll get into some stuff because you're an Oilers fan. That's why I wanted to chat with you today, but I also want to get into the curling stories and whatnot. But you said you don't really keep track. What do you do with the Olympic golds? Where do they sit? Are they framed up or are they in a safety box somewhere?
Well, the interesting thing about Olympic medals is if you ever lose them or they get stolen, they don't ever replace them. So you have to kind of keep them under lock and key pretty good. So I have a friend of mine that has a safety deposit box at his bank. And his name's Art Zimmerman in Calgary. And I keep him there. And anytime I need it for an event or something, I give my friend Art a call. And yeah, so he's we've only almost lost him once in the last few years. But so far, so good.
Almost losing an Olympic gold medal. That feels like, you know, you say that very nonchalantly and casually. Were you freaking out? What's the story behind that?
Here's what happened. His daughter, Brooke, was getting married in Hawaii, and I had an event right before, you know, when you're a parent of someone getting married, you got lots of stuff to think about and take care of. So right before the trip to Hawaii for her wedding, I had an event. I had to go talk somewhere in Calgary, and I got the medals out and I gave them back to him, like, you know, the day before the flight for his flight to Hawaii. So he didn't really have time to go to the bank. So he put them in his sock drawer, and he had a million things on the go and went to Hawaii and probably had a couple too many cervezas in Hawaii, you know, and the memory probably wasn't as great when he got back. And then I think about a month later, I'm like, hey, Art, I got to get those medals. I got another event. I was wondering if I could grab those. I usually give him a day or two heads up. And then I get this, like, a day later, this panicked email, like, are you sure you don't have them? They're not at the bank. And turns out, I was like, you know what? It was funny. It was when he said that, I said, you know what? I guess I'll just have to go win another one, Art. That was my response. So, and then about 2 weeks later, he's like, I found them. They were in the sock drawer. So that was the story of the almost lost medals.
Oh, that is good stuff. All right, I mentioned it. You're an Oilers fan, so are you kind of like all of us at Rose Nation? Are you on cloud nine with this winning streak? Are you just loving life?
You know what? I'll give you the insight on how I became an Oilers fan.
I love this.
I'm from Ontario. Grew up watching Hockey Night in Canada most Saturday nights with my dad. And the Senators weren't around, so I was by default a big Leaf fan. And I love cheering for the Leafs back then when they had Wendell Clark, Dougie Gilmore, Joey Newendeck, Gary Roberts. That was like the heyday for me because they would score lots of goals. They would fight. They were hard-nosed. And then I have to be honest, I moved out west about 20 years ago. The team I started curling with was out of Edmonton, Kevin Martin, and was up in Edmonton a lot. One of our main sponsors owned the Oilers. So we would go up to Edmonton. Some nights I'd stay at Bruce Saville's house. And Alish Hemsky was, you know, had a room at the house and just started loving watching the Oilers. And they weren't even that great back then. But the Flames, I'd have to, you know, I'm living in Southern Alberta in a small town of Bragg Creek right now. I enjoy going to Flames games, but I call them the team of misfit toys. They don't have an identity. They're not too exciting to watch. And I just feel super privileged to watch the Oilers because they're they have the best player in the NHL. Arguably the top two of maybe the top five in the NHL. And they're fun to watch. Every time I tune in, you know, this McDavid's doing something special. And that's how I became an Oilers fan. They're the only NHL team I tune into now. And I'm just praying. I took them all in my playoff pool last year, and they broke my heart in the second round. So, but I haven't lost faith, and I'm just hoping we can make her pretty deep this year. That's for sure.
So you picked up the fandom in the Hemsky era, we'll call it. And then after that, as we know, Decade of Darkness, those were my formative years, which is why I'm usually consider myself a bit of a negative Oilers fan, because it's how I was raised, was with the team losing. But when you go back to whatever, early 2000s till now, give me like the best Oilers game you've attended in that span.
All right. I was in Fire College in Vermilion, Alberta. I believe you're better at stats than I am, Tyler, but I believe it was 2006. Okay. And start this course and still playing with Kevin Martin and the boys at Edmonton. And all of a sudden, miracle cup run. Like, all, you know, like no one expected it. They're in the cup finals. I'm like an hour and a change down the road in Vermilion. And I'm like, hey, Bruce, I'd love to come to one of these cup final games. Any chance you can spare me a ticket? He had a box there. And I remember going down the road, staying in Edmonton that night. And I think they won that game. I think that was game they ended up losing in game seven, but I think that was game six and they won. That was like, again, miracle run, because they didn't really have the horses, but they had this guy, Chris Pronger, who was playing amazing. And they had a backup goalie who was playing amazing. I don't even remember his name at the time. But that was my favorite Oilers moment to date. I haven't been up to any games yet at the new rink. That's how much of a rookie, or like I'm working lots down here. But my dream would be to be able to take my kid, Jack, who is an Oilers fan. That's his favorite team he cheers for. He's 5 years old. My dream would be to take him to his first ever NHL game at that new Oilers rink.
We should make it happen. I'm sure there's some listener of the podcast somewhere that can help us make that happen. I want to dig into the curling career a little bit. I'm a big curling guy. I remember back in 2010, obviously, yes, the 2010 Olympics, everyone thinks of the Sidney Crosby golden goal, but it's the gold medal in men's curling for me, John. When you think about that moment in your career and you think about the 2010 Olympics, like one, it's just so rare to be an Olympian, never mind to compete in an Olympics that's on your home soil, then to win a gold medal. When you hear me say all that, what's the first moment of those Olympics that pops into your head?
Well, first off, I'll say the Oilers are almost as hot as that 2010 Olympic curling team that we had going on. But you know what? That was such a dream run, looking back on it, because I'm pretty near finished my curling career. That was such a special team that I feel so privileged to have been on. And that was the first curling team I've been on that all four of us were like ready to do anything it took. We had four guys that were committed, hated to lose. I don't know if you've watched Shorzy at all. You ever watch Shorzy?
Yeah, yeah.
Hate to lose. That was us. We hated to lose. And that Olympic experience was, in Canada. I still have, some memories that I had from that were, playing ping pong with Marc-Andre Fleury, Sidney Crosby, and Shea Weber on the regular up in the Canadian team lounge, going to that gold medal game. I'll give you a quick story of that. It mixes curling with hockey. So at those Olympics, it was hard to, like, you could go to other, as an athlete, you could go to other sports and you could, usually have no trouble getting tickets, but any athletes that wanted the men's hockey tickets, it was like pulling teeth. Okay, maybe we'll get you a game against, Slovakia, during the round robin. Okay, so we're putting in our requests, and it was like, mixed results getting back to us. Like, maybe we can find some tickets. And then we go and win gold on the set. I think it was the Saturday. And all of a sudden, we got like three offers for the men's gold medal game. And I'll never forget, we had box seats in the Shaw, with the Shaw group, which I'm sure it would have been, good. But that wasn't really who we were. We were a hardworking team from Edmonton, and the tickets, the other set of tickets were like 20 rows back on the it would have been the away end. And those are the ones we ended up getting. And we go to the game, and we just won gold the day before on cloud nine, probably working on 2 to 3 hours sleep max. And it was amazing. We stood up to go get a beer, because we're no longer playing, we're ready to have a few. And we get up, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's Team Canada curling team." They're like, "What? You want a beer? It's on us." Like, we couldn't even. We never made the concession once, because every time we stood up, it was like, beers were getting shoved right up to us. So, and then we happened to witness. I remember thinking this, and it was, I don't know if you remember that game. The Americans tied it up late, and everyone was like, "Oh no, we're going to lose the gold." And I just remember thinking, I was like, "No, we're not. It's going to be better, because, it's a little anticlimactic when you win a gold and you got to hang on to a lead." But I'm like, "It's going to be better, because we're going to go to OT, and the place is the whole Canada is going to get set on fire with this win now." And we were right behind the goal when Sid scored that winner. And I still get goosebumps thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even imagine, like, watching on TV, tense enough, but in that building, I'm sure the tension, you could probably really feel it. Like, that would have just been unbelievable.
Never been a better vibe in my life as there was in that building. And, for anyone arguing against an Olympics in Canada, well, two things have to happen. The players want to play in the Olympics. Yeah. And there's nothing better than watching, like, you know, it's great watching your two favorite teams play. You know, let's say the Oilers are playing whoever in the cup final. That would be awesome. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing better than watching your favorite players from your country compete in the Olympics against the Americans or the Russians. There's nothing better. I've never had better experiences than that in my life. And I sure hope they find a way to get the NHL players back in the Olympics and us to put politics and like other things aside and just get an Olympics back to Canada. Cause I think it would be, I hope I get to witness it again in my lifetime.
Oh, and you just think about like how many great memories just the average Canadian has of tuning into those Olympics, all the gold medals. I remember the first one that they won with Bilodeau, the skier, when he captured that and the moment with him and his brother. And then you had John Montgomery when he went in skeleton walking through the streets with his big ass jug of beer. Like, I mean, an Olympics, no matter where, would be great to experience, but something about it being in Canada and getting to see Canadian athletes do their thing on home soil is just so cool. But you mentioned like that Molson Lounge, you mentioned playing ping pong with some of the Team Canada guys. What is the athletes' village like? You always hear all these stories. You never know how exaggerated they are, but what's it like just getting to sit in there with a bunch of the other best athletes in the world?
It's, you got to almost pinch yourself. You're, you know, it's, because I'm a huge sports fan, so I tune into everything. And I remember going in that. So the Olympic Village, it's great. It has all these meal options. You go in the meal, you know, lunch area or meal area, and they got all the different options. And one of the options at that time was McDonald's. So it's funny, you get all these serious athletes, it's their first Olympics, and they're like, you know, they got their carbs and their proteins like measured out on their plates. And I look over and then there's Ovechkin just crushing Big Macs like is his job. And I remember having a good chuckle out with Benny Eve. I'm like, look at Ovi just creaming Big Macs, and all these other athletes are, you know, counting their carbs. And so it was little things like that, you know, you remember. And it's, you know, I remember, you know, the gym and the weight room, and I had a good, I felt a good comparison to Chris Pronger, because, you know, here's Chris Pronger in there. He was like 6'7", but he had, you know, his legs were like bean strings like mine are. And I'm like, all right, this is one of the hardest hitters and toughest guys in the NHL, and his legs are as thin as mine. I'm like, all right, I can relate to this guy. So, you know, just cool memories like that. I know everyone talks about, oh man, I heard athletes go through a million condoms in the athlete village. And here's the truth. Okay. Cause actually it was like, that's not really how it's going down. Everyone's pretty serious. Like they're playing their sport. They're not there to like, they've worked 4 years and they're not going to, a lot of them are not going to, you know, compromise that with maybe not having legs in the morning. So usually what happens is there's other countries that don't have access to this stuff we have access to in Canada, like free condoms. And so I remember seeing, I think, I don't remember where they're from, but they literally would take the basket because, you know, they're definitely promoting, make sure if you're, you know, you're going to have safe sex in the village. And yeah. So, but there is athletes that would take these baskets of condoms and throw them in their bag. And it's like, you could just tell, and they don't have these at home. And I think they were so then, you know, the word get out, oh my God, you know, they're going through condoms like crazy. It wasn't really the case. It was just other athletes from some poor countries don't have access to like we do in Canada. So that's the truth right there.
That's funny. So you had the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver and like an unreal experience, but everything to an extent's familiar because you're in Canada. Then in 2018, you're in Pyeongchang. How wild was that going basically all the way around the world for an Olympics?
It was totally different experience, but I'm so grateful that I was able to experience both, because, you know, you can't beat the Canadian experience, you know, especially winning. And then you go to Korea and, you know, you have, rather than, you know, a million fans in the whole country there watching, and you have like, I think we had like 20 people there, close family and friends only, because it's so expensive to get there. And totally different vibe. You know, I've never been to Asia before, and it was just a totally different vibe, but a wonderful one. You know, I got to witness a new culture and meet some great people. And they were so nice over there in Korea, and some really cool memories from that one. were because I played mixed doubles in that one. So first Olympics, we curled until the second last day. So it was pretty much, you know, had to keep the eyes on the prize for most of that Olympics. And then this, the next one was, we were done like 5 days in. Like we started early and then I'm like, so we, you know, we had 2 weeks after to really enjoy the Olympics, which was amazing. And a couple of things that I was able to do. I'm a big fisherman. I love to fish. And I found, I like really learning about local culture when I go to a new country. I don't just like doing what the tourists do. So I found this local, it was up in the mountains, this fishing derby, rainbow trout local fishing festival it was. So I went and my dad was there and I brought my good buddy Jay and we went up there and it was all Koreans. None of them spoke English. Went in there. We had our Canada jackets on and we joined in this fishing festival, caught a few rainbow trout through the ice. It was ice fishing. And then we had some rainbow trout sushi, which I've never had before. It turned out to be delicious. So doing little things like that, I met some really cool local folks that kind of were, you know, took us under our wing and helped us catch some fish. So that was something that I really, you know, relished. And then, you remember Jay and Dan?
Oh, yeah.
Jay and Dan from, when we won, we went on their show and it was crazy because it was like 50 mile an hour winds up on this rooftop. We almost get blown off the set, but we have a great time. And I remember saying afterwards, like, hey, we should hang out. Like, we're done now. And their show was done at 3 o'clock every day. So like, yeah, let's hang out. So I got to really get to know those guys quite a bit because, you know, you don't have a lot of Canadian friends there. So strength in numbers when you do meet some. And we had some great time. We went and watched some sports together. We went and, you know, drank some. They had a Caesars party. They'd have a Caesar hour every few days where we could go and have some Canadian Caesars and then go cheer on some of our fellow Canadians. So just little things like that, that really, you know, two totally different experiences, but I'm so grateful I got to experience, you know, both games.
Again, I said I wanted to talk a little curling. So you go back as mixed doubles. I mean, what a cool little event that's become a staple now at the Olympics. It was there in 2018. And what I guess intrigued you about going that route versus the traditional curling route? Like, what do you like about mixed doubles?
You know, what I love about mixed doubles is it's a game that's kind of tailored toward a bit more the younger athlete, the all-around curler. You know, you have to, you know, a lot of the time in 14 curling, you know, you can be a bit of a specialist. If you're a lead or a second, okay, you're a really good sweeper and you can draw really well, but you're not really, you know, you're not really maybe as all around of an athlete or a curler because, you know, you don't have to hit as much or strategize on that side of things. So I really do love that about mixed doubles. It really takes your all around curler into things. And it's more of a fast paced game. Like I have to say, like after curling for 20 years, sometimes it's tough to remain focused and interested in a 10 end curling game. I just get a little bored. And I found with mixed doubles, it's fast paced. You never can lose your focus. You got to really be dialed in all the time. And, you know, the one thing I really did miss from the men's game, I really did miss the camaraderie of my, you know, my teammates playing cards at night, like playing with that Kevin Martin team. My favorite memories of that team were on the road, playing cards and watching the Oilers and just that and telling stories of the good old days and having the odd whiskey or two. And that was, you know, that was not in as much in mixed doubles, but there was other things, parts of mixed doubles that really I found catered to my style. And I felt I had the best chance to win a medal for Canada was at mixed doubles in 2018.
So you talked about, you know, a bit more all-around athlete. You got to be a more complete curler to play in mixed doubles, but you also mentioned it's faster pace. And we've seen, you know, a sport like baseball over the last couple of seasons has taken big strides trying to get faster, trying to modernize itself a little bit to attract a younger demographic. And I don't think it's any secret that curling is also another sport that needs to do that. Like I curl every Tuesday. There is a full rink in St. Albert. I mean, 6 sheets. So there's a ton of us. There's like me and one other person under 30 curling on Tuesday nights there. Like, what do you think curling could do to expand itself a little bit and open itself up to a younger demographic?
Well, you got to have some creative, managers at curling clubs. You can't bring in a 70-year-old that curled in the 80s and 90s and think that that's going to work today. Now, a good case in point is Paul Webster. He actually coaches that Botcher rink that's mm-hmm. half from Edmonton. And he took over the Glencoe Club, which is down here in Calgary, about 10 years ago. And he had a very progressive, creative mind. And he brought in things like beer sponsors and mixed doubles curling and really fun bonspiels. And the rink, the membership went from barely hanging on and almost changing into a hockey rink to now one of the most popular sports at the curling club. And the demographic has changed as well to about 10 years younger than it used to be. So you need to bring in, you got to invest in some leadership that is very creative and progressive that, okay, maybe we're going to have a 6-end games, you know, maybe we're not going 10 or 8-end games anymore, just to make sure we can get a couple more draws and, you know, bring in that mixed doubles aspect, bring in some great sponsors, have some fun, maybe combine it with like, you know, like, okay, we're doing a cornhole tournament with some curling bonspiel on cornhole tourney this weekend, you know, really kind of cater it to that. And I think that if you do that, the sky's the limit in what you can do at a curling rink. And I saw it firsthand with several clubs in Alberta, where if they bring in someone that is really creative minded and isn't afraid to take a few chances, then you can really change the membership around. And essentially, I'm not saying I love old school curlers. That's my jam. Like, I love playing with some old school curlers and hearing those stories. But you also want to bring in that new, like bring in the learn to curl, a learn to curl where you bring in, you know, 20 new curlers that are all in the same boat. So they're not coming in and getting their asses kicked by old veterans, because that's no fun. And, you know, make it fun for them. And those learn to curl clinics and those learn to curl programs and leagues are awesome. And you got to include those.
Yeah. Like, you, not to throw shade or disregard the old, but you bring in the new so that they become interested in the old and it grows that way. I love that point. Okay. I'm going to wrap up here with a couple of more. We can go a little rapid fire style for all of this. One moment in your career that you would like to relive, and not from the perspective of redoing anything. You can't change the past, but just one moment, an atmosphere, an arena, whatever it was, one moment you'd want to relive from your career.
I'll say the winning the Olympic trials in the old Edmonton Northlands Coliseum barn in front of a packed house. And I still, it was surreal at the time, but that was such an amazing moment to experience.
Best Briar host city.
Ooh,
that's a tough one.
I got to say Edmonton's right there.
Good man.
I think Edmonton's got to be, oh man. I'd have to say a tie, Edmonton and Winnipeg.
Fair enough. Most obscure European city you curled the tournament in? Somewhere where you pulled up and you were like, where the hell am I right now? Hotels run down?
Obscure? That is a good question. How about we go with, I don't know if it's obscure, but Oslo, Norway was a pretty darn cool place to curl. And we ate reindeer there. So that was on the menu at the curling club, reindeer stew in Oslo, Norway.
Reindeer stew in Oslo, Norway. Last one, I'll wrap up an Oilers one. One Oiler you'd love to sit down and have a beer with, but the caveat is they can't have their number retired. I don't want you to tell me Gretzky or Messier or Coffee. Give me an Oiler, maybe a depth player that you're like, damn, I want to sit down and have a beer with that guy.
All right. I got to say, I really enjoy watching Zach Hyman. I think he's just a beauty. I love his positive attitude. And throw me in a room with a beer with Zach Hyman any day. I'm all for it.
Oh man, 30 minutes with you absolutely flew by, John. Really appreciate you giving me some time here.
Anytime, Tyler. Love listening to you, and go Oil.
What an absolute beauty, Johnny Moe swinging by on the pod. Definitely going to want to do that again. Liam and I were talking. Not that Liam's a part of the Real Life podcast, but he's sitting next to me in the hotel room right now in Toronto. And maybe we should do like an all curling round table, which would be a lot of fun ahead of the Brier. Liam is also a curling fan like myself. But a big shout out to John Morris for giving me some time and sharing just some really good stories. I dig the one about the Athletes Village as well. We are going to wrap up today's episode of the pod, the chance we had to sit down with our new friend at the Nation Network, Travis Ridgen. That interview is brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross. Protect your memories and more wherever your travel takes you with Alberta Blue Cross. You can visit them online, ab.bluecross.ca/travel. Maybe you want to get in on the Nation vacation. We are pretty much sold out now since we had a couple people step up since the last episode. Going to be a ton of fun. February 18th to 20th in the desert. Check out that and more by heading to nationgear.ca. Here's our chat with Travis.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, a special edition of our Thursday pod here on Real Life. The boys are out in Toronto, so we got a couple interviews to fill in the gaps, and this is a good one. Because I got my guy. Okay, how do I intro you? Trav for Oilers, Travis Ridgen. What do I go with? What's the proper intro?
Unemployed, self-proclaimed professional hockey player would probably be the best and most accurate description at this moment in time.
If I wanted to give a nicer one, you're the only professional goalie vlogger out there. At least the most successful.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to get me in trouble, we can go down that hole. But yeah, you can use that avenue.
Yeah, the face you made almost implies that there are others and there's beef. Is there? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't walk you there.
It's the start of the new year, Tyler. I'm trying not to get myself in trouble. I'm trying to be nice.
I'm trying
to be nice to people this year.
If people want to see your stuff, they can find you on YouTube, on Instagram, Trav for Oilers. And like again, just to explain it very simply, you are a professional goalie vlogger. You're a guy who's played in a bunch of different leagues, and you have the unique kind of platform of documenting yourself through this, which I think is really cool. When did you start all this?
Started like documenting the journey.
Yeah, the journey. Videos.
I was playing college hockey. This would have been 2018, 2019. And like, I've been doing videos for a while. Like, I started making goalie montages. My favorite NHL goalies probably back in like 2011, 2012, because I couldn't find anything on YouTube that I liked. Yeah. So I just found a way to download clips, put some music on it. I ran out of space in my parents' computer. So I figured in my mind, YouTube was a great storage device. And just throw it up online. People started watching them. And after about 2-3 years, had about like 7,000-8,000 subscribers. Woke up one day, was like, I don't think this is really like generating anything net positive for the hockey community. And I had this idea. I don't know why it came to me, but I remember like when I was 10 years old becoming a goalie with my dad, we had no knowledge of anything, like gear-wise, goaltending-wise. I thought, even though I'm 18, 19 at the time, I can use this to help other people. And so I started making my own goalie gear reviews on like sticks, accessories, anything I get my hands on. And so many companies told me it was stupid because I emailed them and be like, hey, this is this idea that I have. I'd love to work with you. Maybe you can send me some samples. This will never take off. Well, 100,000 subscribers later, I guess it worked.
That's so funny because you got in it at an interesting point where the online content space was still being birthed is the way I'll describe it, where like nowadays, if you went with a decent amount of subscribers to any company and said, all I want is the stuff, no extra money, they'd be tripping over themselves to give you the opportunity. And it must be interesting for you to have seen this journey of how legitimate and respected the online creator space has become.
It's changed so much. like it was literally like getting a GoPro Hero 3 or 4 at the time, filming some videos on your phone, if that, because AirDrop didn't exist. So you had to like plug the phone in to the iPhone cable, plug it into your laptop, go to iTunes, try to import it, put into iPhoto. That didn't work. And it was just like a whole process to get everything off the ground, let alone adding a voiceover, to now where you have 3-4 cameras, you rock and roll, you put a little voiceover on top, you have the algorithm of TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Shorts, especially YouTube Shorts, just popping everything off. And I tell people this all the time. The formula that I had to get to now just short of 100,000 subscribers, if I applied it today, it wouldn't work. The same formula would not work because things have changed so much in that time span. Like there was a time period where I was gaining 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 subscribers a month on YouTube, just vlogging my day-to-day life, playing men's league or, you know, skating on the outdoor rinks, or, you know, doing whatever, as opposed to now where things have really, really changed, where YouTube doesn't really reward long videos anymore. They want them really short. They want them really tight. They want them action packed with a good hook. And it's hard to do that when you're telling the story of your minor professional hockey journey. It's very difficult.
I want to get into that journey a little bit because I think it's fascinating. So you started again, you played your college hockey. You kind of came out.
I say the word played very lightly, but yes.
And then you got into this documenting yourself through the pro ranks. I guess I'm just fascinated to talk a little bit about the balance as well. Like when you first started doing that, did you have guys on the team, coaches, whatever, being like, enough of the shit, enough of this? Like how often did that pop up early on? Does it still pop up now?
Still to this day.
Yeah.
Because when I started college, it started off, it was spun out of an idea of things aren't really going my way this season. And I'm going through a lot of interesting things that I think are best to be documented on film. So at least I have some time, like, kind of like time capsule to show you in 5 years or my kids, whenever, you know, they have them, God bless, if there's a woman out there who wants to do that with me. But that was like the original idea. And originally the guys were like, what's this guy doing? Like he's putting a GoPro behind the net. He's micing himself up. Like he's filming himself with sticks outside the, like, none of this makes any sense.
Yeah.
But over time, like from college to, you know, training in the outdoors to going to a tryout in Columbus, Georgia, to go play in Sweden for 2 years, to go getting a tryout in Norway, to go playing in Detroit and Motor City in the Fed, to Watertown, New York, to the Gulf Coast of Mexico and Biloxi, Mississippi, all on the way. Guys have gotten a lot more open-minded to it. Because I think also, like, I try to, like, build other guys up. Like, I don't think you really get anywhere by knocking guys down, which, again, comes back to my New Year's resolution. We're trying to make friends this year.
Which is why we're not digging into beefs.
We're not trying to piss anybody off more than we have to. And so, like, if I have a teammate who, you know, he picks up the camera, starts talking to it or whatever, you know, gives a shout out to his mom, I'd probably make his day if I put that in the video. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, when Jonesy's talking about his mom, all right, great. Hi, mom. Miss you. You know, shout out to my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. Like, that makes the guy's day, right? Stuff like that. There's still quite a few, I'll use the word dinosaurs, that see it as like, dude, put the camera away. And I understand that. But that's also how I've been making my full-time income for almost 6 years now. And like, I love doing this. Like, I love sharing my passion of hockey and my passion of film together in the online space.
Yeah, just looking at the different spots you've kind of bounced around a little bit. The trip out to Sweden stands out. Like, the couple of years here in the Fed, but Sweden, what was that like? Like, what a jump to make.
Yeah. It was interesting because, you know, I get a little bit pissed off with COVID because I have some very hot takes on it.
Yeah.
But it's probably the best thing that ever happened in my life. Like, COVID single-handedly changed my life for the better, from going where I was trying to play college hockey. That was all I wanted to do. I just wanted to finish college hockey, finish my education. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened, and then things went nutty over here, and you couldn't even get into a rink without getting arrested. But Sweden was wide open. And so my agent at the time, he said, hey, we got an offer in Sweden. This is probably like April-ish of 2020. Why don't we take it, see what happens with the rest of the world, and worst case, we got someone to sit on. I said, that's a great idea. So we signed it. And then fast forward to July or August, nothing's open. Yeah. Sweden's the only one open. And Sweden had a ban on imports for a while because they're like, everybody's trying to come here. Like, you got to stay out. Like, we don't want you. We have too many people here. And then I went over there and I was very close-minded. I didn't want to go over there because it was, I guess the typical mentality of a lot of people in North America, whether you're in Canada or the US, of like, we're the best, we're the greatest, this is how it's supposed to be. The rest of the world is like, that's not really of interest to me. But COVID forced me. I had no choice. You want to go play hockey, go to Sweden, or get fucked. Excuse my language.
Yeah. No, we swear.
Right?
That's the mildest language reason.
But like, that was the mentality.
Yeah.
And so when I went there, I had no choice but to embrace the culture, to embrace the way the game was being played over there. And although things were very interesting, I mean, I went over there and my roommate and I, who I played college hockey with, I dragged him over there because I said, hey man, are you bored? Yeah, I got nothing to do. Why don't you come play hockey with me in Sweden? We ended up living in this tool shed in the back of this backyard for this nice home. So there's this nice home in Sweden, in Tullinge in Sweden, just outside of Stockholm, to the southwest of Stockholm, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure somebody on the video version will fact check me on that. But this guy had a tool shed, and it looked like the shed was like fitted to just have a couple beds in there. And there was no windows. There was no blinds for the windows. There was no doors. And there was a bed that was just barely like big enough to make the door open and close that you'd have to like shift over if you want to get into the bathroom. And then there was a couch in the living room. And my roommate and I, we called this place the Love Shack. Reason being, there was no love that was going to be made in this place because there was no doors and there was no privacy.
No blinds.
And so we lived in this place for about a month, month and a half before we figured out like, hey, the writing's on the wall. I think this team's trying to like scam us and try to like take our money and or just railroad us. So we were supposed to be paying the rent for, originally it was $500 a month when we came there. Mm-hmm. Then when we arrived, we were told it was $1,000. And then about a week into being there, the landlord comes in with some new like pots and pans and coffee mugs and says, all right, boys, this is the new price in Swedish krones. And we looked at the paper, we put it into like currency exchange.
Yeah.
And I said, Swedes, rent just went up $500. It better be some nice mugs, right? So that was $1,500 a month for the rent. And we're sitting there for like 2-3 weeks. Playing hockey, practicing, waiting for games to go. We're playing exhibition games. It's fun. We're traveling a little bit. No vehicle either. So we're taking the bus to the train station and the train to practice and then walking to the rink from there. And for games, we're being told, hey, you got to find your own way. So you got to take the train like 2 hours.
No team bus or whatever. It's just like, nothing. Figure it out.
So like this is what I'm saying by the writing was on the wall of like, we're taking the train to practice. We're getting fleeced for coffee mugs. We're getting, you know, asked to pay $1,500 a month for rent. So probably like first week of October, I got a message from who was my agent at the time saying, man, you're getting scammed. I'm seeing things unfold in the vlog, which again, documenting on YouTube really helped. Yeah. You should probably get out of there sooner than later. So the landlord for the place, him and his wife went on a trip for the weekend. So on Friday night, the second they left, we started packing up all of our shit. And then on Saturday, we made like 4 trips from our place to the bus stop, to the train station, down to the next bus stop, to the hotel we found. And we moved all of our stuff into the hotel back and forth all day long. We cleaned the place, made it look tip top for anybody asking. And there's a video of this on YouTube for anybody that wants to fact check this, by the way. I had a much longer haircut at that point in time as well. But then we just bounced out of town, see you later, grabbed all of our stuff. And then when we went back to the rink to get my stuff, I came into the room, my gear was gone. And I looked at my roommate, Sweens. I was like, where is my gear? And then I remember the equipment manager mentioned something about putting all the equipment in like a metal storage cage. So I thought, okay, there's a storage cage here somewhere. I have to go and find this. So I go to the Zamboni guy who only speaks Swedish. And I asked him, I was like, do you know where like the storage locker is? And he looked at me like I was crazy. And so I put in Google Translate, do you know where the storage is? And I'm showing him my phone. He's like, ah. And he walks, opens this room, lets me in. There's this cage. And the cage is probably about, if you can see in the video version of the show, it's about as high as the ceiling. So I have to like climb the top of this cage. I have to like shimmy in the top. I get Sweens to like hold my feet so I don't like fall in and I'm like done. And I grab my bag, which is zipped up, thank God. And I grab my other stuff and I pull it out of the cage. And then we go pack up all the gear out. See you later. That was it. Agent found Sweens new team the next day. I found a team a week later after I sat in a hotel for a week, which was very stressful, by the way. I was probably about a day or two away from actually going home back to Canada because I was like, I'm eating $110-$120 a day at a hotel. I can't do this forever.
Yeah.
Found the team, hopped in the train, other side of Sweden. And then that was the team that I spent the next year and a half, 2 years with.
Wow. This ability and your willingness, I guess, to just be like, I'll just do it. I'll just do this. Like, okay, this might be a scam. I'm just going to dip, grab my stuff from the cage and go. Even to start that, like, oh, COVID, I'm just going to go to Sweden and play. Where did you get this adventurous? Like, for me, I would be scared shitless. I'm a homebody. I've never left Edmonton. Never probably will. Where do you think that your willingness to just kind of shrug and say, fuck it, I'll do it. Where did that come from?
I had no choice. Like, I'm in Sweden.
Yeah.
I'm over 7,000 kilometers away from my home, and you know my mom's in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Like, what else am I going to do? Am I going to sit here and cry, or am I going to go to the rink, pack up my stuff, try to find a new team, call this agent, try to find a new agent, hop on the train, bounce, see you later, I'm going to the other side of Sweden, I'm going to go play the rest of the season. Like, those are really the only two choices you can make. Like, even, like, in my entire journey in the FPHL and the Fed, which has been, it's been eye-opening for so many reasons. Like, my living situations. When I got to Motor City, I was at the goalie coach's guest house because the team housing wasn't ready. It was a great house. It was like right on Lake, I believe Lake Huron. Beautiful view of the water. Sunrise were fantastic. My roommate was a gambling addict. And this guy would be up to like 4 in the morning every single day hitting parlays. The TV would be on. I'm sleeping. His room's like above mine. And I'd hear like, hit the parlay, Trav. 400 up. And I'd walk out and there'd be like smoke and disco ball lights and like music going on at 3 or 4 in the morning. It was insane. I'd be like, Ross, go to bed. And he's like, one more round, fella. We're practicing at 11, dude. So that guy lasted about a week and a half with me because I kept telling him to go to bed. And he moved to the team housing with one of the other guys, which worked out better for me because I was by myself for about 3 weeks. Then I moved to the team housing, like one of the other team housing units where they didn't have any rooms available. So they had me on a blow up mattress in the living room for about 2 days. because the blow up mattress was flat. Like, I'd blow it up, and then by the like 3-4 in the morning, I'd be like flat on the floor and be like, oh, this isn't working. And then they moved me to the couch, and then they put somebody else on the other couch the next day. So him and I shared a living room for a couple of days. Then he bounced. We had a guy get called up. I took one of the rooms that was shared with one of the other guys. It was great. Had the room for about 3-4 days. Guy gets sent back down. They said, Trav, back to the couch. And then I ended up leaving the team for hip surgery last year in December. And then this year in Watertown, when I signed, part of my like signing deal was like, we're going to get you your own room, which at the time was like, that's sexy. Like, that's really attractive. I get privacy. I got my own bed. I'm not on an air mattress. I'm not traveling around. There's no disco balls, smoke, music, and lights. Like, is Brooks and Dunn?
Yeah.
Boots Good Boogie. Go where all the cowboys go, right? And so I go down there, and I don't get my own room. I'm sharing a room with other guys. Like, our mattresses are like literally like you and I apart is where we're sleeping together. I had like three different guys that I shared a room with, and then I got traded to Mississippi. I go down there, hey, like, you're gonna get your own room. I'm like, this is awesome. Everybody gets their own room. Everybody gets their own room except for me. I show up I'm like, where am I gonna sleep? Well, we got a guy who just got called up, and we got a vacant room. Well, can I live there? Well, we don't want to touch stuff because he might come down. We don't know anything yet, so let's just wait. Well, where am I gonna sleep? Well, we got an old mattress in the back of the garage. Why don't you pull it and put it in the living room? Literally, a mattress just plopped right in the middle of the living room, sleep on the concrete floor. And the roommates I had in Mississippi were actually very good guys. But they love to stay up late night watching like Entourage till 2 a.m. And again, the smoke, the lights, the music, everything. And like, I like to go to bed early. I like to go to bed like 10:30, 11.
Yeah.
So I remember one night I said to the guys, like, I'm sitting on the mattress and the lights are on, Entourage is on full blast. Kevin Connolly is doing his thing. And I said, guys, you're going to go to bed anytime soon? They said, Trev, you can go to bed. We're going to watch TV. And so I took the mattress, I dragged it out back into the garage, and I slept in the garage for like a week. I put the mattress down, I put some sheets on top, I put some like pieces of wood to kind of cover up some of the windows so the light and the moonlight wasn't coming in.
Yeah.
And that's literally my start to finish living situation in the Fed. Even when I was in Motor City for 2 days, and this is all documented on film if you don't believe me, they moved me to a house with one of the military guys who was like he supported the team, he gave money to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy, God bless him for his service to the country. But he was the most like unsocially aware guy ever. Like, he would just like yammer on for like two and a half hours about his ex-wife leaving him. I wouldn't even say a word. I'd just be nodding my head. And I'm thinking to myself, don't say anything engaging because it's going to add an extra hour and a half to the conversation. And we go on for like three and a half hours. I'm not even getting a single word in with this guy. And I'd say, all right. And I'm just going to say, Kevin, just for the sake of, I don't want to put his actual name out there. Say, listen, Kev, I'm going to go upstairs and call my girlfriend. Oh, you need me to come? Not really.
Nah, I'm probably good. Handle this one on my own. Yeah, I'm good.
Like this is the living situation in minor pro hockey, like that with the Shack in Sweden, and it was it's been a very interesting experience.
Yeah,
that being open minded every step of the way to that of like, this isn't ideal living with 9 guys in one house sharing one bathroom, but it's all about perspective, right? Like, mm-hmm. I get to make $125-150 a day US going to the rink every day. I get to practice working on my craft. I get to work on being a better filmmaker. I get to work on my podcast, which is now a part of the Incredible Nation Network portfolio of shows now.
Yeah.
Shout out to our boss and Jay, my employer now. And yeah, it all comes down to your mindset. Like, you choose the mindset you want to have for all this type of stuff.
How much of it over these last couple of years for you became like really content driven, or was it always still about hockey?
It's both.
Both, yeah. Like, and I guess they can perfectly coexist, especially with your setup.
To come back to what I mentioned earlier about pissing people off, making friends this year, I can't lie. I'm a very, very bad liar, and I'm very bad at faking things. So like, if you think I'm pissed off, I'm probably pissed off. If you think I'm happy, I'm probably happy. Like, there's no real in between. And so like, with my hockey journey, for me to just come in and just go through the motions and play the part just to make a couple of videos, make a couple of bucks, I can't do that. Like, it's only been fueled by my desire to want to become the best goaltender I possibly can, the best athlete I want to be, and the best man I possibly can become on this planet. I talk about this on my own show, Sling the Biscuit, but hockey stick is the measuring stick to life, and who you are is the only piece of the process you actually get to hold and get to keep. Yeah. Right? Like, the team I play for is only temporary. My body, my physical conditioning is temporary because one day that'll all go away. The equipment that I use to play on the ice, that'll go away. The money I'm making, that'll go away. The person you are is the only thing you hold the entire time through and through.
Fair.
So that has always driven me to just try to become the best version of myself because it's genuine. And as far as the actual like producing a film goes, I love the idea of like just capturing this piece of film that I could show you, I could show my mom, I could show somebody in Sweden. Like, you're actually living my life with me to the best of my like storytelling abilities. And fast forward to one day when I do have kids, I can show them and be like, hey, you know, you're 5 years old, I'm 40, 50, whatever it is. You can live my life at 25, at 23, at 27 with me through the lens of the cameras that I was using and the videos that I posted, assuming YouTube doesn't take them down, because I hope that they stay up forever. But I can do that. And it's the greatest time capsule ever, as well as this being my full-time income for almost 6 years now.
Yeah, which again is also wild. Like, if you would have told 18, 19-year-old Travis uploading gear videos and all that, that, hey, man, by the time you're 27, full-time gig, that'd be pretty sweet.
I get so many questions, people asking, like, how did you go full-time? Because I wasn't the first to go full-time, but it's probably one of the first.
Yeah.
Like, especially in the goalie realm, like, there's nobody else that goes full-time. And it's been very challenging. I think the hardest part was going from, I'm making part-time money. It's good part-time money, but I need full-time money if I'm actually going to sustain this, because like somebody's got to pay the rent. I got to put groceries on the table. Yeah. Like I had a girlfriend at the time. Someone's got to get her something nice for her birthday coming up, or she's going to kill me. You know, stuff like that. Like money has to be coming in. And there was a period for about 2.5 months when the vlog had just started where I did 5 videos a week, every single week for 2.5 months. And it was so exhausting. And so then I took about a week off and I was like, okay, this is not sustainable long-term. What if I do 3 videos a week? And so I did 3 videos every single week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern for 1.5 years. There's 1 week where I think I missed one. I only hit 2, but every single week was 3 videos a week. And that was what really blew up the channel. I found so many sponsors. I found so many opportunities in hockey and just everything really started to take off. And actually that was what kind of led me to starting the podcast, Slim the Biscuit, which has been going for about 3 years.
Yeah.
But like that drive and the determination of not trying to solve the money problem, but I need to do a better job producing these videos and to do it in a way where people are going to continue to watch consistently, that's going to generate that full-time income, consistent input for consistent output, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Right? Because at the end of the day, people have to want to watch this. I can't just slop some shit on the internet and then just pass it off and hope that people watch it. Obviously, I look back at old videos now and I say, that looks like shit compared to what I'm doing now. But that's also the process of, you make 100 videos, they're going to get better. You make 500 videos, they're going to get better. You're always in the pursuit of growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk about the podcast in a little bit because, I mean, hey, big reason why you're here today. Big reason you're part of the Nation Network now. But I also, whenever I hear someone playing in the Fed and a league with the nickname the Fed too, it's like, to me, that's like good minor pro hockey right there.
Yep.
I would imagine there's just been some outside of the living arrangements. Like I want to talk about almost on the ice, at the arena, going to games, whatever.
Oh boy.
But has there been like an insane road game or something where you're sitting there between the pipes or maybe sitting on the bench just being like, I can't believe this is happening in a hockey arena right now?
I'm just trying to think of like what I do and I don't want to say publicly because even though I'm not in the league anymore, there's certain things that I don't want to mention. Like the one story that comes to mind. And again, I want to preface this and set the tone. Like the Fed is actually named after the league in Slapshot. The Federal League, it's actually named after that, right? And the whole concept of the Fed, the FPHL, they were the FHL. And then one of the players got pissed off because he didn't get his sticks and get paid for the rest of the season. He took them to court, sued them. They couldn't use the name FHL anymore. And then they became the Federal Prospects Hockey League. So, and that player is now still back in the league. So it's just such a, the league never finds new ways to make me shake my head. But, I think one of the best stories that comes to my mind is I was traveling last year in Motor City expansion team. And one of the guys in the team, he's our fighter. He always sits beside me during games and we're in Binghamton, New York. And before games, they always have like a ticket guy come around for roll call and say, hey, anybody need tickets, 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 friends, family, chicks, Tinder girls, whatever you got, friends, acquaintances, whatever you need to get 2 tickets per. And so guy asks, I was like, I don't need any tickets. Look to my right. He doesn't want any tickets. Cool. Warm-ups are going on. He comes up to me and says, Trav, I'm going to bring a chick back to the locker room after the game. And I said, how are you going to do that? Like, we're a professional traveling team.
Yeah.
And we have the locker room occupied. You're not going to do that. Like, you're just messing with me. So then fast forward after the game, we're loading up the bus. One of the guys says, where is so-and-so? I can't see him anywhere. One of the guys goes back to the room to go get, the skate sharpener. Walks in the bathroom. What do you think he finds?
Well, he was true to his word.
He was true to his word. And so we're loading up the bus, and we have a very tight bus, by the way. There's only one spot to sit, and that's sharing my seat with me. So all disheveled, hair everywhere, no shower or anything. He sits beside me for the next 12 hours from Binghamton to Detroit. And this is not a sleeper bus, by the way. It is just just chairs for 20-something guys.
Yeah.
And so the story that he gave me, he found 2 ladies off Tinder, matched them, said, hey, why don't you come to the game? They're separate. They didn't know each other. Made them pay for tickets, didn't give them roll call because I was there. I saw it myself. And then after the game, I guess picked one, brought her to the players only entrance, brought her through security, and then that happened. So that basically sums up the Fed experience. And practice was at Monday at 11.
Who's got the best crowd in the Fed, though? Like, is there one building where you're like, oh my God, like they're brutal, they're on you, anything like that?
I would say the fans in the Columbus. Like when I was playing for Mississippi and Columbus this season, during the national anthem, they have a packed arena. They have a fantastic crowd and fan base in Columbus. And during the anthem, for the landing of the free, the pause, somebody from the absolute like upper deck, like Randy Orton from all the way up there, yells, "Trav, you fucking suck!" And everybody hears it. It's quiet.
It's quiet.
The point, whole yeah. crowd starts laughing. The guys look at me, and I just like, he's not wrong. Like, what do you want me to say, right? Like, I would say that one was pretty funny. That one stands out. The fans also too. That same guy, because we walk out of the arena, and there's like a whole like kind of like ice district here in Edmonton, like where all the fans can kind of hang out. They have security to stop them from attacking us. I walk out. One of the guys yells, "Trav, you effing suck!" And I'm like, "All right, I'm just gonna ignore this guy. I'm gonna go back to the bus." And he says, "Hey, if you don't come back and talk to me, I'm unsubscribing." I turned around. I went right back to talk to him because, you know, it's business, right?
Yeah, you can't lose that subscriber.
And I came and I went to talk to him, and he was short. He's probably about, you know, 5'8", 5'9". If you're on the video version of the show, I'm 6'5". I'm a pretty big guy.
Yeah.
And he looks at me, and I said, "Would you like to say that to my face?" And he's like, "Hey, man, I like the videos." So we had a good conversation. It was really fun.
That's usually how that goes, too. When someone's heckling you, it's usually like, "Oh, yeah, I watch your stuff."
I will say, I get so much shit online. Because like I am authentically myself, mm-hmm. and I don't really care if anybody likes it or not. Like, I say what I think, I say what I believe, and I am who I am. I'm not going to fake it for anybody. I take a lot of shit because of it. I've never once ever had somebody ever talk shit to my face or say something that I would see online to my face in person, ever. Not one time.
I mean, yeah, like I'm the same way. Like, I mean, I have people all the time in my DMs telling me this, that sucks, whatever, you're this, you're that. I have never had someone outside of Scrums and Beer League tell me, like, your shit sucks or whatever. It's, in Scrums and Beer League, I get that quite a bit, but never, like, at an Oilers, you've never had someone come up and be like, because it's always Keyboard Warriors, right? You know how it is.
Johnny forgets he's not 7'2" in person. He forgets that he is only 5'3" and 120 pounds in his mom's basement using her Wi-Fi.
Let's talk about Slinging the Biscuit, your podcast. Just tell us about it. What's it about? Who are you with? Tell me about your co-host, all of that, because you're going to be recording a new episode here from Nation HQ right away.
Shortly, yes. So Slinging the Biscuit was an idea spun out of COVID, sitting in my basement with Pat Shea, former pro for the Maine Mariners and YouTuber as well. Said, "Hey, like, I have these ideas that I want to share that I can't put in the vlog. The vlog's short. The podcast can be long. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do a show, share some ideas, get some interviews, kind of share some really good conversations?" And that happened. We went about a year and a bit. We got a little bit of traction, but not a lot. And then I just felt creatively that things weren't working. So Pat ended up going on his own to do whatever he was doing. And then I found a new co-host, Dave Wheeler, who he has a morning show in the city of Winnipeg. He's like the top morning show for 20 plus years. And when he came on like that instantly, I felt like we captured lightning in a bottle and the show blew up. Like, we're doing from the beginning, probably 6,000-7,000 listens an episode to where we just signed with the Nation Network. We're averaging like 15,000, 12,000 an episode. Like, things really took off. Dave wasn't able to make the new contract, the new version of the show, but my new co-host, Rob Boudlon, he's a former pro. He played for the Toronto Marlies, the Hershey Bears organization, played 4 years at Merrimack, played for the South Carolina Stingrays. He's been all over the place. And he also owns the company Butt Ends, like hockey grips.
Oh, yeah, I know what those are.
So he's got lots of stories, and him and I kind of, we sling the biscuit every
His TikTok Sunday. Is good with all those videos he has of him asking guys if they want to try it. That is hilarious stuff.
There's actually one clip we posted that went really viral of, he was in Phoenix, Arizona, and Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner were there, and he was invited, by the way. He wasn't just some fan or like one of the seekers outside the Marriott Hotel asking guys for autographs. Yeah. He was actually invited there by the Coyotes for the skate and like for the summer skate. And Mitch and Austin walk by, and because Robbo has these Snapchat sunglasses that capture the video, and it's captured on film. He says, "Hey Matt," or "Hey Austin, you want to try a Butt Ends grip?" And he's like, "No, man, I'm good." And just like the disgust in his face, like, "Leave me alone." Same thing with Mitch Marner. Those clips went viral, and so that's Rob. That's my co-host for the show.
Thanks. So people can find it again wherever they get their podcasts from, and they are now a proud partner, a proud member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. You mentioned to me just before we started recording. So you're out in Vancouver now. You're without a team right now?
At the moment, unemployed, yep.
So what's the process like right now? Are you fielding calls? Are you out there looking? Like, what's the deal?
So I have an agent who takes care of most of that.
Okay.
I'm in a bit of a transitioning period. So I've gone from full-time with professional hockey and doing my vlog, shifting that over to continuing to vlog as a behind-the-scenes for the podcast, which is hopefully my post-retirement endeavor. I have a couple other things I'm working on as well on the side. But the podcast, my full-time thing. Obviously, we have incredible studios here in Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Ottawa, Toronto, and Montreal.
We're everywhere.
Not in Winnipeg, my hometown. We're waiting for that. So I can have an excuse to go see my mom on a more regular basis. But the show's based out of Vancouver. Mr. Producer Grady and his intern Lachlan help me with the show every single Friday, Thursday, whenever we record. And it goes live on Sundays. Video version on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. And you can see our incredible studio, incredible setup downtown in Vancouver Wall Center.
It is very nice out there. I like our office here in Edmonton, but their setup in Vancouver is sick. Trav, welcome to the company, I guess. I'm the one to do it because I'm the only one on Real Life today doing the interviews. But welcome to the company, and thanks for hopping on.
Pleasure, man.
There you go. That is a wrap on this week's edition of the Real Life Podcast. One more sponsor shout out to wrap things up. It is Tourism Jasper. We were there earlier in the month. Jasper in January is always such a good time, but just because the calendar's flipped to February, it does not mean that you need to give up on your mountain dreams this winter. Visit our friends at Tourism Jasper online. It's still skiing season. You can head out, hit the slopes, or maybe just spend a weekend in the town. It is a fantastic spot. And even though it's not Jasper in January, there's always fun times to be had by hitting the Rockies and visiting Jasper. Big shout out to our guy, John Morris, and to Trav for Oilers for swinging by and talking a little bit on the podcast. Some good stories shared on an interview exclusive episode of the Real Life Podcast. If you want to hear some stories about our trip to Toronto, we are going to be dropping a new episode of Oilers Nation Radio tomorrow. And there's a new episode of Better Late Than Never with myself, Liam, and Bag Milk, and Frank Saravalli. It's going to be a good one. Don't want to miss it. Find Better Late Than Never wherever you get your podcasts from. We'll be back with a fresh Real Life on Monday. Chat with you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.